Welcome to Talking Tech. If you've never joined us before, we've shifted our time. We used to do this in the evenings. We're trying a pre-lunch Talking Tech. So Talking Tech is where we talk about news and interesting stories in technology, but we also take your questions. So feel free to use the chat in whatever platform you're using. We're on YouTube, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Twitch. And so we're taking all of your questions. Feel free to throw them in the chat. My name is Sean Walsh. I'm Emerging Services and Technologies Librarian. And with me?
Hi, I'm Charlie Barnico. I'm the Guiding Ohio Online Learning Coach here at the Public Library.
So we have one response. Good morning, Morgan. Nice to see you. She's one of our regulars. So she made the transition from the nighttime to the afternoon or pre-afternoon as it's 11:30. So we have a bunch of technology stories, but again, feel free at any time to pop in, ask us a question, whatever burning question. If we can't answer it live, we'll get back to you. We'll find you through our chat and reach back out to you. And even if you're watching this post-recorded, feel free to throw things in there because we also get those in through social media as well, and we can answer those questions. So if you're watching us later. By the way, this does turn into a podcast, and you can find us on all podcasting platforms. So Charlie, you want to lead us off?
Sure, why not?
All right.
Why don't we talk about some branding controversy?
Okay, it's been a while since we've been on.
Yes, it has been. So Kellogg's.
The cereal people.
Yes, cereal people.
All right.
Well, I guess their cereal side is diminishing just a little bit. So they're looking to rebrand.
So people aren't eating cereal as much. Okay.
Yes, supposedly. So now they're gonna be named WK Kellogg after its founder.
Okay.
So the cereal side.
Okay.
Now the main change is the snack side. So like Cheez-Its and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's amazing how many things they have in their brand portfolio. Yeah.
I know, it's crazy to like watch like the tree expansion and like all the like what every brand
owns.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of amazing. But they're going to start being called Kellanova. I think I said
okay,
that right.
So
I'm heavily butchered.
I'm having some moments here.
Yes.
Kellanova. We didn't turn on Melanie's mic. We didn't even introduce Melanie. Hi, Melanie.
No,
we did not.
There's no mic. It's been removed.
Oh, yeah. I got to put a mic back in. We've been doing a lot of stuff over the summer with kids and videos. So Melanie doesn't have, she has to yell. Kellanova.
Yes. I mean, I could have said that completely wrong.
I got nothing.
This was posted on Wall Street Journal the other day.
WSJ usually knows what they're doing.
And post it on Threads.
Threads.
Because Threads exists now.
Yeah, we probably should talk about Threads.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. So, interesting.
Yes.
Well, I just saw kind of in the same note, not necessarily one of my stories, but kind of saw that Smucker's, so an Ohio company, is buying Hostess.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I knew about that too. That was an interesting
buying the Hostess brands, which I can't remember who else owned. Yes, please, Threads. Okay. So, yeah, let's talk about Threads.
While we were
taking our hiatus to do quite a few awesome things here at the library with kids fourth grade through 12th grade. We might talk about that later. And our robotic garden.
Yeah.
Threads came about. So Threads is what I would consider a Twitter alternative by Facebook. Mm-hmm. And it's directly integrated into Instagram. So if you have an Instagram account or you have a Facebook account and you have a Threads account, you just have to activate it and connect it and load the app. It's still gaining momentum. I am on Threads because any new social media platform I jump on just to kind of see where it's going to go. It's part of what I do for here at the library. In my other capacities, but it's also fun for me because I've been on everything. I've been on Waves. I've been on. Do you even know what Waves was? It was a Google thing. It didn't last long.
Well, I know about like Google Plus being a thing for a while.
Google Plus. I was on Google Plus. I was on Waves. So Waves was a precursor to Google Plus. Waves was like a competitor to Reddit and chat at the same time. But like some of our viewers, was on IRC back in the day, and still am actually. Because someone asked me about IRC recently, I'm like, yeah, I still have my ID and I still use it.
Yeah.
So Threads, I'm waiting to see the killer reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people got a little disturbed when Twitter turned into, hey, someone else on IRC. Thank you. Awesome. I'm excited. So the thing, like, Twitter turned to X. I'm still having trouble calling it X. So I'm gonna keep calling it Twitter.
Everyone's still calling it Twitter anyway.
No one's changed like some of the verbiage either. So it's you're on X, but you're still tweeting.
Yeah.
Which is really convoluted. But I mean, it seems like weird you say you're Xing.
Yeah. Because
it makes me think of like country music. All my exes live in Texas or something like that.
Yeah, that's one way.
It's a good song. Yeah. It's a good song. I'm not even a country music fan. I like that song though. So yeah, I'm watching this one kind of develop and see how the world goes. But it's fascinating to watch these different platforms launch. And I don't know if you've noticed in your kind of experience in the world, I don't know if Charlie or Melanie wants to jump in on this, you know, different social media platforms have a generation they're attached to.
Yeah.
And some buy in from the previous generation, some buy in from the post generation. But like, there are definite, you know, for them, for a lot of people, social media is email. And then for people, it's Facebook, Instagram, you know, Twitter, and then Snapchat and, and some things like that. You know, WhatsApp. I don't really use WhatsApp. That's one of the few
that's another Facebook
part of Facebook. Yeah. It was an entity that Facebook bought.
Yeah.
So they brought in big in Europe and Asia. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple other ones that are huge overseas that we don't really use here. But they have their distinct groups. They also have their demographics.
Because WhatsApp is more of a texting app. It's it's kind of, it's not Snapchat, but it's like, it's similar to, I would say, or like
it's the got
integrated
its own,
messaging. Through yeah, it's like got its Messenger own kind of weird. Facebook and stuff like that. Yeah,
Messenger or Facebook.
That's kind of what WhatsApp is. It's not really anything crazy.
I'm still a bit salty they took chess out of the chat app for Facebook. You used to be able to play like, chess with people. Miss that.
No more message games.
No more messenger games. Yeah, because they used to have that in. They also had the MSN in their chat had games, and back in the day, AOL Instant Messenger had games. I'm dating myself significantly there, but well, I think everything has their own demographics. Like Twitter originally, and I don't know, I haven't looked at where when it's transitioned to X, but that was primarily males, 45, 50 to 65. Pinterest, females in their 20s. Now this is the average demographics, not absolute. It's average. Females in their 20s to their 30s. Facebook females, 45 to 55. Twitch males, 25 to 30. That's their official demographics. But in reality, we know a lot of people in elementary school use Twitch. What else? Instagram tends to be my generation. Those are in males in their 40s and females in their 40s. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. YouTube has switched drastically their demographics. Their official demographics, because they don't track demographics for children.
That makes sense.
Is the same as Twitch, males 35. But the known demographics for YouTube is actually third grade. So Melanie, what age is about a third grader?
Turning
nine. So nine is their beginning demographic.
Oh, geez.
And probably even a little bit younger because of the videos there. Even though there's no monetization, they can't track it. They're not supposed to track it, which is good. Their demographic is nine. Fascinating. So, and I don't know where we are with
YouTube
Threads.
YouTube Kids, too.
YouTube Kids, yeah. And that's tracked entirely different.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But still, that's another demographic, but it's still subcategorized.
I've tried to use YouTube Kids with my own son. It's fascinating what passes and what doesn't pass. I'm a little astounded at times, like, wow, that's nifty. Now, Threads, I haven't seen enough because there just hasn't been enough on the ground stuff for it yet. So, but thank you for asking about Threads, and thank you for chiming in about ICQ. Thank you. I am kind of astounded by that. So thanks for the chats and keep on chatting. Keep on asking your questions. So you got to do a story. I'm going to do a story. So again, I'm going to show my age. who out there remembers OS2 Warp? I grew up in an IBM family because I had a relative who was connected with IBM when I was a kid. And so I got some hand-me-downs. I had my PC Junior was my first real awesome PC. And I had some other, you know, Aptivas and things like that over time. And pre kind of the same time during, you know, programmed on it for years. Awesome. So OS2 Warp was IBM's, and they did partner with Microsoft for a while with this, their own OS, their own Windows operating system. It was OS2 Warp. They kind of, when Warp came about, they went on their own. But yeah, and so there's a group of people who want to bring it back, because there's always those nostalgia people, or people like Charlie and I who love to run old hardware. So it's called Arca OS.
Okay.
And it's OS2 Warp with UEFI support. Okay. So modern support, support for modern support SATA, because a lot of stuff didn't even exist with OS2 Warp. SATA and all that stuff. So it's getting a pretty decent following. And I'm going to load it on a PC here to try, because that's kind of my thing. And we may play with it around here. It's the same thing, like Amiga has released a couple of things recently that I'm interested in. Because Amiga was always a fascinating operating system, and their connection with Commodore and all of that. It's kind of cool. And the folks from B. So B kind of took their own route. Okay, so you had Linux, you had Unix, and then you had the BSD people. And B is the BSD people. So BSD wasn't Linux.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite Unix, but it was more Unix-like than Linux. Say that three times fast. So B is kind of, B and BSD are back out again, and they're trying to grab some market share because, you know, Ubuntu and Red Hat and Fedora and all those forks, they have pretty good market share, but people are looking for alternatives, and there are some things that are written in BSD that just function better. There's some firewall applications and some proxy applications that just literally run better under that framework and that kernel than Linux. A little more efficient, and it's just the way people write things. So it's kind of interesting to see some of that come about, and it's funny because the little, so you had Tux as the mascot for Linux, and BSD had a little tiny devil, and so these little mascots are now coming back out again and things. So I kind of find that cool. So hey, if you're an OS2 Warp fan, hey, it's out and about again, and you may want to give it a try. Also, hey, if you're frustrated with Windows and Windows 11 isn't your jam, or Windows 12, which is right around the corner.
Supposedly.
It could be out and about. So what else you got, Charlie?
Well, kind of going off of, well, I mean, I guess it's technically not old technology, but essentially came out with iPhone 5.
It is old technology now.
Now it is, because Lightning is now kind of dead.
Kind of dead. Mostly kind of. Dead.
Not completely, but almost.
And I think before we went on our hiatus, we kind of talked a little bit about this, that the European Union was kind of putting the kibosh on saying, hey, you got to stop creating your own cables, Apple. You know, come on, join the rest of us.
Creating more e-waste.
Pretty much. No
one wants it anymore.
Pretty much.
So, yes, with the announcement of the iPhone, was it 15 now? iPhone 15 has now been officially been shown with a USB Type-C cable, which will save a lot of headache for people going to the store and trying to buy a charging cable for their phone. Especially since it would make it easier just to find cables.
Yeah.
I don't have to go for it to the Apple specific section, find that your cable is gone. And
yeah, really, there's not going to be
it anymore.
There's not going to really be a difference in the cable itself. Apple will probably do something to make it to be kind of try to be specific, even though it's USB-C, it's a fancy USB-C or something like that, Teflon coated or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I still think the best USB-Cs I've seen are the ones that have breakaways and stuff like that, where they have magnetics. But it is nice to see universal cabling, and the European Union is pretty strong on that one. They have been for a long time. And it is kind of silly because while I like competition between phones, this whole competition between cables is, because we work with a lot of people here that come in. I know especially Charlie does, where we help people with their phones. And like we have a drawer of cables because everybody's phone for a while had a different type of cable, and it's somewhat of a nightmare.
Not every cable
had every feature.
Yeah, exactly.
And things. So,
but yeah, now with the universal type C, for the most part, it should make at least maintenance and being able to have the right cable ready a little bit easier than it used to
be.
Now they are saying like it's not going to be 3.0, it's going to be 2.0. type C is what they're saying it's gonna be.
So they're gonna release a slow one.
Yep.
Yeah.
But they're boasting that it's supposed to have better battery life and it has faster charging.
Supposedly. Alrighty.
So we'll see how that goes.
So,
but yes, they're getting at least they didn't come out with a new weird standardized plug like the 30 pin from years ago.
Yeah, some of those USB
iPods and iPads. Yeah,
some of those. Well, they even Samsung had some weird USBs for a little while, mm-hmm. With like extra power and yeah, no.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, so we don't have to worry about that anymore.
And in all honesty, with induction charging and stuff, you don't really need it for charging. It's more for sync, mm-hmm. you know, with your car if you're not using Bluetooth or if it works better over a cable, you know.
Yeah, so you don't lose connection and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, interesting. All right. So here's another classic PC one for us.
Okay.
So there is a community group that's launched a website called Windows Update Restored.
Okay.
So as Microsoft stops supporting different operating systems, they turn off the updating features. And so if you have to run an older version of an operating system for one reason or another, or you choose to, you can't do updates. It's kind of a pain. Well, there's Windows Update Restored provides, and this is their wording, provides updates for classic Windows versions. Currently, the site is hosting 95, 98, and SE and NT 4.0 updates.
Very nice.
Now, you think, why on earth would you be running this? Well, to be honest with you, until recently, the entire U.S. Navy had a specific contract with Microsoft to run Windows XP on all Navy vessels. Submarines, nuclear submarines, nuclear carriers, mm-hmm. the whole nine yards. Because, you know, when you're doing something like whether you're the U.S. Navy and NASA or any of those entities, you have to know the operating system, the hardware, inside and out, so that in a crisis situation, you knew everything.
Yeah.
Okay? And so, you know, that's why they adopt older operating systems and keep them running. But yeah, up until recently, they had a contract with Microsoft to provide support directly for XP. And I think for a while there, NASA had a contract with Intel. I think it was Intel. To provide support for the Pentium processor for some of their mechanics.
Hey, I mean, Pentium still exists.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're no, still but great. We're talking Pentium. We're not talking Pentium 2, 3.
Yeah, we're not Pentium. Talking about the new.
Yeah, 1990s technology.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so what else do you got?
So another Apple thing. But mm-hmm. this one only pertains to France, supposedly.
Well, it's
yeah. More France regulations than anything.
Yeah.
But there is a new iPhone 12 software update in France
mm-hmm.
that addresses radiation concerns. So the French regulators were doing tests on an iPhone 12, found that it was giving out just a tiny bit more than what they wanted regulated. So they have banned all sales of the iPhone 12. As of the release date of the iPhone 15, or the announcement date of the iPhone 15, which was just recently.
Okay. Well, I mean, you've got an antenna, multiple antennas, because you've got a Wi-Fi antenna,
yep.
you've got a LTE antenna, mm-hmm. you've got a Bluetooth antenna, all in this phone. Mm-hmm. That all releases radiation. Now, I'm not going to get into the debate about radiation and health and stuff like that because I am not a medical expert and I'm not going to go either way on that debate.
Neither am I.
But yes, it releases radiation. And the interesting thing is, I find it interesting. It's like the plastic legislation in California where, you know, certain plastics are deemed very dangerous in California.
Yeah.
But not in any other states.
Yeah.
And you know, too much radiation in France, but it's okay in the United Kingdom. It's okay in Canada. It's okay in Brazil. It's okay in the US. You know, I don't know. I find these sometimes yeah. fascinating. Where can I get an update for Windows 7? We're waiting on that one. I'm hoping that,
hopefully the same place that's doing the,
yeah, basically the XP I'm hoping Windows Update Restored will turn on some stuff for 7. The other thing is, in all honesty, where you're at with 7 right now is you have to do them manually. They do release update packages you can find, but you got to be very careful when you find them. Because that's a good place for people to hide nefarious software in those update packages, because they're no longer from Microsoft, so they're no longer considered safe. So you need to try to find a reputable place for that. That's a good question. So we may get back to you. So we have you in the chat here. We may shoot you a link back as a direct message as a place that we may find is safer than other places, but not everything is safe when it's no longer a canonical. Gotta say it this morning. Canonical source. Canonical? Sounds like I'm from Massachusetts. Canonical. Our studio engineer right now is just shaking her head because she spends a lot of time in Massachusetts and does not like my accent. All right. So I guess it's my turn for one.
Yes, it is.
Let's do a food one. We like food ones here.
Yeah, why not food one?
If you haven't watched this before, we like food and technology together. Heinz out of Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Okay. Actually, not as much out of Pittsburgh now, but out of Pittsburgh originally. They have... they've got Heinz Remix.
Okay.
So you've been to the places that have the soda fountain remix.
Yeah.
Where you can get cherry vanilla Dr. Pepper mm-hmm. or an orange Coke or something like that by hitting different buttons. Heinz is taking a page out of that and doing their own thing.
Okay.
So Heinz has basically a sauce distribution thing called Heinz Remix. It's cloud enabled.
Okay.
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 And I think the cloud enabled part is not as much for the consumer as it is for them.
Yeah.
But you say we're going to go to see a Guardians game. And normally I'm a Cleveland Stadium Mustard person. That's kind of my thing. But I could go to one of these Heinz Remixes and get a smoky chipotle mango ketchup on my hot dog. I don't know why, but I could.
But you could.
I could. By choosing different combinations. But what Heinz is doing is they're also tracking trends. So are you using the Heinz ranch? Are you adding stuff to it? Is it a chipotle ranch?
Yeah.
Or do you like it spicy? Because there's levels. There's low, medium, high when it comes to spiciness.
Yeah.
So you've got some choices. I like the flexibility in all honesty. I like the concept of it. I think it's fun. But I think as a marketing end of things, what better way to know what people are making? And I think the soda fountains do these too, by the way, is report back to the parent company saying, oh, wow, like everybody's making, I'm going to say it again, smoky chipotle mango ketchup.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should sell this in the store. So it's kind of a cool research thing. It's also, I think people like to customize their food. It's a thing. It's always, I like to tweak foods now and then, but it's like a thing.
They like to make their food their own.
I'm a kid of the 80s. I loved going to the soda fountain at like a Chuck E. Cheese, and I'm like, I'm going to mix orange and Dr. Pepper and this and this and this, and then run the soda fountain.
Yeah.
Because I used to always make a cherry, before where they had cherry Coke in the thing and a cherry 7-Up, I would mix 7-Up and then the cherry out of the thing and have my own custom thing. So it's fascinating. I think the cloud aspect is what the technology aspect is draws me in.
Yeah.
So
I think the thing is too, it also reports back to say, hey, they need another cartridge.
Well, trust me.
Like
as we're adapting to some of our new printing capabilities here, the fact that it dials home and calls for new cartridges and then they come saying I asked for them because I'm the one on the machine.
Yeah.
Like Sean needs a new black cartridge. No, the copier does. Sean didn't order it. Sean wasn't even barely aware.
The copier did it.
The copier did it itself. Ooh, it's AI. No, it's not.
Yeah.
Not a lot is AI. That's the scary thing. We'll talk about that later.
So we talked about EV vehicles.
Right? Yeah. I'm going to talk about some too.
But we're getting there, right?
Yeah. We like to talk about EVs, by the way. You'll learn that.
Yeah. We'll get there. But Honda, known for their vehicles.
Yeah.
Known for their motorcycles, all that other stuff.
Known for their weed whackers.
And weed whackers, yeah. There's a lot of cool things that Honda makes. Actually, they make a lot of stuff that you don't know about.
Generators, weed whackers.
Exactly.
Yeah, they put the engines in a lot of things.
So Honda is making another suitcase motorcycle.
Okay.
If anyone remembers the Honda, whatever the little compact car was.
Yeah, yeah.
You got a little motorcycle in the back.
Yeah, yeah.
For it. I don't remember what it was called.
I can't remember either.
I thought it was the... Maybe it's down here somewhere. But anyway, so they are coming out with a suitcase motorcycle.
Okay.
EV. It's a battery powered one.
Mm-hmm.
has only 12 miles of range,
mm-hmm.
and it weighs 40 pounds.
That's not bad.
Which is not bad at all.
Yeah.
But, I mean, 12 miles of range for a essentially fold-up compact motorcycle.
Yeah.
Which is really cool, I think.
12 miles isn't bad. So, yeah, I could see that, like, say I work downtown, you know, and I could use this to zip around to go out and grab lunch or to run some errands or whatever. Or if I was on a college campus, I could zip around. So.
Oh, and yeah. It's actually really not that... You can buy it from participating Honda and Acura dealerships.
I forgot that they were connected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For only $995.
So under $1,000.
Under $1,000 for a little suitcase.
It's me 12 miles. Mm-hmm. How does it charge?
I think it charges... I don't know if it says how it charges.
It's got a 490-watt motor in it.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I'm assuming it's going to charge off a household electric and doesn't need a 220 because that would kind of defeat the purpose of having to 220 it.
Oh, no, that's just a little footstool.
Yeah.
But it could be just like a general, I think there's a charging bank in there for it. It looks like general, just like power.
Just
like
regular power?
You straight plug to the wall.
Yeah, I wonder how long it charges for.
Fascinating. I'm sure it will take a minute, but they really don't give any other...
Yeah, it's new enough.
It can be fully charged in just 3.5 hours.
Three and a half hours.
In both folded and ready-to-ride configuration using a common 110-volt outlet.
110. Not bad. 3 hours, 110. Mm-hmm. You know, so you could zip around, throw it back in your car, go home, plug it in, mm-hmm. use it the next day.
I mean, you could leave it. I mean, I wouldn't recommend you leave it in your car, but you could just hold it in your car. And if you need if you're stuck somewhere or just going around town,
yeah.
like up in the village or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could ride around with it. Yeah, instead of driving the car around.
Yeah, that's cool.
For under $1,000.
Under $1,000 is kind of interesting too. So I've got a couple of things that kind of work into that as well. So Eric Buell, so Buell Motorcycles, you know, racing titans.
Yeah.
Is basically putting a lot of their stock into electric motorcycles and scooters. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's in the same concept. Short distance, local distance, you know, I mean, this motorcycles and scooters have always been big in Asia and over in Europe, but I feel like they're taking more ground in the United States. I don't know. Have you been to Columbus recently? I've been to Columbus. Did you notice, maybe Melanie has too. Did you notice all of the rental EV scooters everywhere? Like everywhere. Yeah.
They're everywhere. They're in Cleveland. They're in Cincinnati. They're Columbus.
They park them by Playhouse Square. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, they're everywhere, you know, so I could see, you know, this, you know, bicycles, EVs, stuff like that, you know, and cities are a good place for motorcycles, stuff like, you know, my trip in, not a good time. Not going to happen. I drive about an hour to get in here every day. I'm not going to ride an electric vehicle. No, that's not going to happen for me yet. Nor a motorcycle. Too dangerous. Too many deer. Not as many deer in the middle of Columbus, per se.
Oh, yeah.
Or Cincinnati or Cleveland. But they're banking a lot on this. And so they're trying to find the name of the vehicle. Did I put it over here or did I not? I didn't grab the name of it. But basically, the other thing is Buell is known for high performance. So they're going to put out a bike that isn't going to be a run-of-the-mill, you know, putt, 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 wherever you go, it's going to move. And electric engines have tremendous torque. That's the one thing. Because I don't know, do you follow motocross or anything like that at all?
Not as much.
I've noticed that the younger divisions in motocross, so the kids motocross,
it's
almost all electric vehicles now. Not gasoline.
Yeah.
Not two-cycle, not gasoline, electric.
Mm-hmm.
So you see these little kids just hauling
with
these high-torque engines through mud, uphills, doing jumps, just it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just flying. It's great. Kind of fun to watch. I've got one other story I want to throw in here, kind of in the same thing. So direct lithium extraction, new mining technique.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know, lithium mining is what, you know, because we use lithium for batteries. Lithium and nickel mining is pretty detrimental to the area around it. It's pretty rough. Traditional lithium mining, this is what they do, and I didn't really know this for sure until I read it. So current method of extracting and processing are slow and resource intensive. Brine is pumped to the surface and into evaporation ponds. The evaporation from the sun refines the lithium. So basically, they're drying the lithium salt out of the salt. It could take months to years to get a large amount. That's why lithium sometimes is a hard commodity, because we're banking on lithium that we've already stored up to dry previously. I didn't realize this. So literally, it's like drying sea salt and anything like that. You're throwing it out, letting the sun do it.
Yeah.
It takes up vast amounts of land. It's not necessarily the best thing in the world for the environment. So direct lithium extraction is basically, we're going to pull the brine. We're going to run it through some filters. We're going to pull the lithium out. We're going to extract the lithium on this side. We're going to put the salt over this side. We're going to treat the salt, send everything back where it goes, and call it a day. So it's not like a brine well injection. They're not sending anything back into the ground. They're taking stuff out, and then they're basically purifying the brine and separating that out and using the regular salt for road salt is what I gathered from it. So they're making road salt. They're making lithium. They're making clean water is what they're getting from this. So I'm hoping this pulls off, because it then yields lithium in a lot higher quantities and more effective. And they just discovered a giant lithium deposit over by Salt Lake, because most of it comes from Salt Lake City. I didn't realize that. A big deposit that could put us head and shoulders above where everybody else is, like over China, over Russia. Okay. Yeah. Big time. So I'm pretty cool about that.
Yeah.
So what else you got?
I was going to talk about...
I should pause for a second. Anytime you want to ask any questions in the chat, I know we're going to get back to our friends that asked about a Windows 7 question for getting updates, but anytime, feel free to throw any questions into the chat. We'd love to hear from you.
So I'm going to talk about the Unity game engine.
All right, ready for a roller coaster. Yes,
this is a roller coaster of emotions for a lot of people. So Unity is a big game creation tool that a lot of game developers use as a general...
It's the underpinning of many of the games that you play, whether it's on mobile or on console or on PC.
Yes.
It's kind of the underpinning for everything.
So if no one has really gotten into this news lately, because it's been everywhere for the most part, Unity is going to start charging certain developers or all developers if they have made it under a certain download threshold and or a certain price threshold.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to start charging those developers like cent-wise, you know, quite a bit of money, and which is it, but it's also per install. Not per purchase, not per, you know, which, you know, whatever, but per install.
Yeah.
So essentially what they're going to be doing is, if Unity recognizes that there's a startup or an install of a new install of a game, they're going to come after it and then charge a developer for it. A lot of small indie developers are complaining about this, as it could be detrimental for their funding, because they don't usually make a lot of money from what they do.
Yeah, the funny thing is, as much as you spend on games, I don't know if our watchers do a lot of like gaming on their devices or whatever, but you know, it's very much, it's not that different than the record industry. So you're paying, you know, X amount for a CD, X amount for a game or whatever, but that money is studio costs and other stuff. And eventually it trickles down to the person who created the content. And it's usually tiny amounts of money.
Yeah.
You know, millions in record sales, and the artist made 40 grand that year, you know. It's the same story. And I mean, I don't want to criticize Unity for trying to make profits, because you need to make profits as an entity.
Yeah.
But I think how they've approached it so far is a little rough. You know, kind of springing this on people, because it's kind of one of those things like, you know, the base thing that makes your game. You can't just walk away from it.
No.
You know, it's the base. It's what you build upon. And you can't just go, well, they changed the pricing of that, I'm going to switch to a different engine. You have to rebuild from scratch.
Yeah.
And so well-established properties, something like a Pokemon Go, which runs on Unity, you know, a lot of install base, you know, and the people from Niantic aren't going to be able to just go, oh, well, okay, we can't use Unity because we're getting charged too much.
Yep.
We're going to go to, I'm just going to say Quake. It wouldn't run on Quake, but just throw it out there. The Quake engine, you know.
Yeah, Unreal
engine. Unreal. Oh, sorry. Thanks. They used to be called the Quake engine.
Yeah. Now it's called Unreal.
Unreal. So the Unreal Engine, because it's not designed to do that. It's designed for something else entirely, but they can't just flop over and go, or they can't develop their own engine.
Yeah.
Because we've seen people develop their own engine. There's a reason why Unity is popular.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's kind of interesting to see the underpinnings. They kind of have you over a barrel. So, but I saw that they backed off a little bit.
Yeah. The Unity did come back and say that they're pulling back and they're going to start rethinking about other ways to do it. Hopefully more in the site, because they don't understand how much small company games make, or how much small companies actually do put in much time into Unity as they thought. So they're looking at rewriting and redoing what they're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, as a small developer, I would look at it this way. I mean, Unity is my answer to not having to invent the wheel. Get a product out there, make some money, build my company. You know, for the larger developers, the ones that have, you know, hundreds of thousands of apps and stuff like that, I think it's a different story for them. But like as an indie developer, and I only have one app out, you know, and I'm hoping that my game is going to be the thing, or because you use Unity for things other than games too.
Oh, yeah.
There are other apps that live and breathe on Unity as well. So.
Yeah. Cause I could see big companies being able to pay for the small percentage that it charges for this kind of stuff. But for, again, small developers, that's a big chunk of change that you're throwing at them to pay off.
So feel free to ask questions in the thing. So I've got an Ohio story. I love doing Ohio stories. Okay. And it's an electric story again.
Okay.
So, you know,
Talk about your electric story.
If you've watched this a lot, I follow a lot of the developments in Ohio because I am pro industry in Ohio. And so I'm going to try to get the name of the company right. Joby Aviation, try to say that three times fast, has invested $500 million to build a new facility in Dayton, Ohio, over by the Dayton Airport, to produce air taxis. So electric air taxis.
Electric air taxis.
Okay. But they are VTOL. So VTOL is the vertical takeoff.
Oh, okay.
So they look similar to, in some ways, they look like a drone because they've got engines,
seating area.
Yeah. Sort of like a drone, but sort of not. They remind me of like the Marines Osprey, which has a VTOL aspect. So it has propellers, and those propellers are up this way when it wants to raise and land the aircraft. And then as it's kind of taking off, the propellers tip down and then it pulls it forward and it looks like a traditional aircraft at that point. This looks similar to the Osprey, where the front propellers go up. They actually, it's kind of weird. They look like they have like kind of like a hinge that pushes up, and then they lock back into what I would consider like a normal propeller shape and pull the vehicle forward. Now, like, okay, aircraft taxis. Why would you need an aircraft taxi? Actually, I could see them kind of popular in Ohio if you look at anybody trying to get to Put-in Bay, Kelly's Island. Especially during off seasons. Because there are people who live there. There's library branches, by the way. Sandusky Public Library has a library branch, at least on Kelly's Island. I'm not sure about Put-in Bay, but I know Kelly's Island for sure. You know, people live all year round.
Yeah.
But other things, you know, let's just say you want to do air taxi. So air taxi could be, hey, I need to get from, you know, Cleveland to Akron. You know, I need to get, you know, from here to there within the state. I can see a lot of use for this. And so they're pushing very hard, and they're pushing our friends at the FAA to green light what they're doing. And so it's, what do they call it? I'm looking for my article again here. I lost it for a second. they're driving vigorously to win federal aviation certification. I think it's funny, driving vigorously since they're flying. Driving vigorously. So, but ideally, commercial passenger service in 2025. 2 years. Really 2 years. Maybe less than 2 years at this point. So I'm kind of looking forward, and I like when there's development in Ohio. Amazon and Intel have dumped a ton of money into Dayton and Columbus for chip building as well as data centers. In fact, I just saw Amazon dumped another $1.5 billion because a friend of mine has been working at the Amazon data center, and I do not think that he has you know, every time he's ready to say I'm done, like, you know, we've completed this job, more money has come in and they've just added on more racks, more whatever. He's an electrician. So he does, you know, basically the electrical and then the low voltage. So the network cabling and stuff. He does all that stuff for a company that's had a contract there for, I don't know how many years. Mm-hmm. They just keep adding. And it's good for Ohio because it's tax base, it's money, it's jobs, and it's future. I like that. Oddly enough, all of that going back to MCI running fiber optic cable through Ohio in the 1980s that we're still using today. So what else you got?
The only one of the few things that I have is supposedly Google won't repair cracked Pixel Watch screens.
Bummer.
Yeah, kind of sad, but they...
I'm assuming there's a secondary market for that.
Not really, actually. Hmm. The repair market for it is really not anywhere near what it could be, at least for the watches, or at least for the Pixel watch. You can buy like a secondhand, like used watch and replace the screen if you really wanted to, but they really don't give you access to doing anything. And Google really doesn't have any...
I wonder if jewelers do, because jewelers is like, I would go to a jeweler to replace, you know, a traditional watch face. I wonder if a jeweler would do a smartwatch.
Well, what they're saying is, though, is Google doesn't sell the parts for it,
so you can't get it. So you gotta have a donor.
Yeah, either you have to do equipment. A donor, or you have to send it to Google to where they might send you a replacement. Again, I say might. Because
it's not like watches don't take abuse. No, yeah. This isn't a Pixel watch; it's a different brand. But I've already replaced my band with a metal band right off the get go because I knew I was going to destroy the rubberized band. That was going to go. That was going to go shortly.
But for the most part, the problem with the Pixel watch is under their warranty statements that they're like any typical wear and tear is not covered under. Warranty and all that kind of stuff too.
Well, typical wear and tear is one thing, but cracking a screen is not typical wear and tear, in my opinion.
Yeah. So, but you supposedly, but everyone online is kind of mad about it. There.
Why would be too?
Why can't I repair this? Why can't I do that? Well, iFixit has come out and been like, well, you can, but you can't.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, because Google just doesn't sell the parts for it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Charlie and I are big proponents of the secondary market when it comes to, you know, self-repair and things. You know, we're all about being able to fix things. If I have the ability to do it, I'm going to fix the screen on my phone. I'm going to fix the screen on my watch because I have the ability to do that. Or I want to be able to go to someplace who that's their business. And a lot of cool local businesses do screen repairs on laptops, tablets, phones, all that stuff. But you need the parts. Yeah. There's only so many donors out there affordable secondary donors, markets, you know, Facebook Marketplace, eBay, all that stuff. So,
but yeah. So we'll see. But I know a lot of Google products other than the watch so far has been getting more and more parts out to be able to fix and replace things if they are broken.
All right.
So other than that, the watch is where they fall short on currently.
Yeah. Google's usually pretty good about certain things like that. And this is where they're kind of dropping the ball here.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So we've been talking about ChatGPT and all of its fellows probably for, I don't know how many talking texts now, probably a good 10, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's at this point, we are in a, I will call it an arms race. That's the best way I can describe it. There are people developing chat writing technology, and there are people developing technology to check chat writing and art, by the way, art and things. So whether you're creating your art and stuff by AI or you're detecting it, now it's an arms race. So there are people in different universities learning how to look for telltale signs that's been done by AI. There's other trying to make it as human as possible and going back and forth. I know there was a big scandal recently with Wizards of the Coast, one of their more recent books. One of their artists who does traditional artwork tried to speed things up using an AI thing, and that's where we ended up with weird finger positions, like they were bent funny in the drawing, and just surrealistic things, even for a monster in a role-playing game.
Yes.
We use AI here in a lot of ways. you know, even the sound that you hear currently is being filtered through AI for us because we have a vent going constantly above us. And so we filter out that sound. We use an AI piece of software that does that. But neither Charlie or I are auto-tuned. So these are, unfortunately, our real voices. Yep. You know, and I'm okay with AI for creating things.
Yeah.
As long as you say it's AI.
Yeah.
Like, I purchase books for the library as one of my jobs. And I've noticed more and more, you know, the author is like, you know, this book was written by Sam Weiss and ChatGPT. You know, and so he was using ChatGPT to fill in his outline, you know. Yeah. And we've had some students in here for some of our programs, and we've asked them to create, you know, as part of the program, it's required as part of the program to create a small speech for a product that they're developing. It's for our Monster Tank program here, which is a kind of like Shark Tank. Just don't tell the Shark Tank people. But they create a product and they learn business plans and pitch it and stuff like that. And we had a couple students that didn't want to write their own presentations and use ChatGPT. And the irony was that as they're reading them, they couldn't pronounce the words that ChatGPT and didn't know the definitions of the words that ChatGPT put in there. And so when I asked the person, I said, well, what does that mean? Oh, I don't know. And I said, well, why'd you put that word in there? Well, I didn't. And I said, well, where'd it come from? And then they showed me the thing that generated it. And I said, well, then this isn't your own work.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, creating email subject lines, you know, with a AI thing makes sense. You know, certain functions make perfect sense. But saying something is your own work and then having it done by AI is a different story, whether it's art or whatever, unless you're giving the credit. Like, I've seen some amazing artwork done by AI, and I've also seen some pure nightmare fuel done by AI. You know, and it's we're in a different world. Is it Skynet? No, we're not there yet. It's not self-aware or anything like that. If it was, it would find much better things to do than create chunks of text for role-playing games and or speeches for people pitching their products in our program.
Yeah.
But it is interesting to see this arms race of detecting, because I can't imagine what it's like to be a teacher or a professor where, you know, you're sending out and you're expecting people to write their own thoughts and they're coming back with, you know, and to me, something like a Grammarly isn't necessarily AI. It's to help me perfect what I'm writing. Mm-hmm. It's nothing different than spell check or grammar check built into Word or Google Docs or whatever.
Oh yeah.
But there's a limit. It doesn't necessarily go in and change the tone, where AI will change the tone of what you're writing. You can say, some of them give you options like, I want to write this email subject line as excited or as sad or as angry or as, you know, melancholy. Why you send melancholy emails, I do not know, but it's an option and the one thing that I use periodically. You know, and I don't always use the subject line verbatim, by the way, because some of them are also nightmare fuel. But I may take bits and parts like, oh, yeah, that's how I wanted to say it. You know, the grammar's a little bit better with this. Or for me, especially dealing with social media, I have to be succinct.
Yeah.
You know, so a subject line has to be succinct to try to get all the data in there. I want to say, like, here's a million things I'm emailing.
Oh, yeah.
But I need to get it in a subject line or I need to get it in a tweet, not an X, a tweet. That's going to be a joke for us for a while now. But so the AI arms race is on. So what else you got? We've got a little bit more time for a couple more things.
Okay. So let's see. We have... All right.
Any chem nerds here? Hold on. Let's see.
I'm thinking something. I think we got it.
Nope. This one? Homo sapiens. Any chem nerds here? Well, I'm definitely a chem nerd. Not my major thing, but yeah, absolutely. So hey, welcome to the chat here. And we've talked about lithium. We talked about some other stuff. So I don't know if you caught that bit. Direct lithium extraction. We're fascinated by some of these things. So what do you got?
I got metal bike tires.
Yep. Let's talk about that.
So
Metallurgy.
Yes. NASA's bizarre shape-shifting metals are now available to buy. So they are essentially supposed to be as strong as titanium. Actually, well, they're kind of made of titanium as well.
Okay.
But is a crowdfunding Kickstarter for a DIY, easy-to-install, 10 times the price of a good bicycle tire, though.
So hold on. NASA's crowdfunding?
It's not NASA per se. It is a company that took the NASA material.
Okay,
so it's
kind of
like
it.
Velcro.
Okay, they're running
away,
with it.
And they're kind of running with it. But it's called, was it Ninol? Or Nitinol?
Nitinol, yeah. So let me jump on and ask. So it's not about lithium recycling. A new way to extract lithium from the ground that doesn't involve letting the salt cure via the sun. They're actually using a filtering extraction process. And so they're able to pull out the lithium, recycle the salt from the brine they're using to extract the lithium. So they're basically creating road salt, clean water, and lithium as this process versus letting giant pools of lithium just dry in the sun and then harvesting it over weeks or months, to answer the question in the chat on Twitch.
Yeah, so it's a shape memory alloy made of nickel and titanium that can be trained with heat to remember its shape. And it's made by the Smart Tire Company, which are supposedly former Shark Tank contestants.
Former Shark Tank contestants.
That are hailing from Akron.
From Akron. Mm-hmm. The former. I don't think it's the former. It may still be the rubber capital of the world. I don't know. We have to look this up.
It is. It isn't. It just really depends on what
you're
going with it.
If you're from this area, especially I'm closer to Akron where I live and grew up, you know, Akron is, you know, it's Firestone and Goodyear.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool. So smart metal from NASA being made into tires. See, as a guy who used to ride bikes all the time, or like in my case, I also do off-road like ATVs and UTVs. It'd be great not to puncture my tires.
Making the tires of new rovers?
Yep. Hmm. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah, but this is essentially just the tubes that have this alloy in it. You can buy replaceable rubber mm-hmm. that wraps around the tire. So,
yeah. Well, I mean the tube is the money part, you know. Mm-hmm. You wear off your traction after a while. That's why I replace, mm-hmm. you know, tires and whatever. But yeah, if I didn't have to worry about deflating mm-hmm. because of a puncture or whatever, you know, especially where I ride, you know, ATV, UTVs, I'm in the middle of nowhere. I have to be towed out if there's a problem. And I don't want to be the dude getting towed out on the, you know, several hundred pound four wheeler or several hundred pounds side by side, you know.
Now see,
I always wanted to have like six guys on dirt bikes pulling me, kind of like feeling like Santa Claus.
Just trying to get out.
Because it take that many.
Now see, the retreads only cost $10 per tire.
Yeah.
And they're rated for 8,000 miles.
Okay.
Which is crazy. But the tube is, again, what costs you the most.
Yeah.
And it's just retreading at every 8.
But yeah, but the thing is, if you can last the tube longer than the tires, that'd be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I could see, you know, that because this has got to be the alloy, because I think our chatter's kind of referring to it. I think this is the alloy that they made the rover wheels out of.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah, that's sweet. That's really cool.
Well, we have this, so that this could transfer the cards at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just retreading.
Yeah.
After however many thousand miles it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's, you know, just... there's airless tires now.
Yeah, so, airless tires are a little weird.
I mean, they're just rubber.
Yeah. So I don't have any of them
on. A little
bit
of flex.
Because I haven't ridden a mountain bike in quite a while.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you look at me. you know, I have ridden around on airless tires on forklifts. A lot of times they come with airless tires and some tractors do, but my experience with airless tires and forklifts, I can run over a whole bunch of nails, but it's the weirdest feeling tire because there's no give.
Yeah.
It's solid. It's a little weird.
I'm sure.
And they are a pain.
Yeah.
I haven't done one, but like a friend of mine has a skid steer and I think it took him like, you know, it takes a while to change a tire. Let's just like add a day on because he had to chisel off the previous tire. before putting the new one on, basically. And he ended up going to tube tires.
Wouldn't airless tires need heat to reshape? That's what they're talking about with the tubes for the bicycle tires. I mean, you have to shape it to the size that you need it to.
Yeah, shape it to the size. But no, airless tires are basically just giant chunks of foam. Real super hard foam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, almost like kids' toy tires is very, very similar.
Well, very similar. Thinking about like what Goodyear came out with a few months ago. Well, yeah. Those are like full rubber. They're just like, they have like a little bit.
Well, there's a difference between run flat
and
like tubeless tires. Because run flats are built in a way that they retain their shape even without air, but they have no suspension. Where the airless tires are packed airless. Full of something. Yeah. You know, I've also ran tractors full of calcium instead of air.
Mm-hmm.
That's a weird feeling too. That's different. That's a very long drive down a very bumpy road
with
no suspension and no cushions on your seat.
Yeah, no.
Fun. Old John Deere tires with full of calcium. That's why I might have back problems as further as I get older.
Oh, man.
All right, so it looks like we're getting close to our time here.
Tire full of pure calcium?
Pretty much. It's pure. It's basically, it's like chalk. So it's calcium for the most part. But yeah, it's chalk, essentially. Sometimes it actually is pure calcium. It's lime and stuff like that, essentially. Mm-hmm. So we've got a little bit more time because we go about an hour. So I wanted to talk about, we've talked about blue. Blue Origin, sorry, not blue. Blue Origin, and we've talked about SpaceX.
Not the microphones.
Not the microphones, and not the really cool song from however many years ago. Now that's all stuck in your heads too. So Stokes Space.
Okay.
Never mentioned these folks
before.
Never
heard of them before.
Okay. They're a 4-year-old company with about 90 employees.
Okay.
They just had a fairly good test of their oxygen hydrogen engine. And it's based on a ring design. So instead of having a single output conical rocket engine, instead it's a ring with multiple jets.
Okay.
All right. Okay. And that allows them to have, you know, thrust and ability to basically just focus and kind of balance out. So they had a successful test at Cape Canaveral of basically their secondary stage of a rocket.
Okay.
And this doesn't sound like much, but for a company with, you know, all right. just got a good thumbs up from one of our new viewers. Hey, thank you. Nerds who aren't monolingual Germans. We are definitely not Germans. Thank you.
Yeah, no.
But our podcast is really big in Italy and we have no idea why. So, somehow, we're just throwing it out there.
Yeah,
we were told we had like 40% of the technology market share in Italy and we have no idea why. There's nothing mentioned about Italy. We love Italy. We love Italian food. We have no idea. that aside, so Stokes Space. So I'm kind of, it's kind of a big deal for a 4-year-old company run by kind of like nerds like us who built, and it's a unique concept, this ring concept of, instead of having a central engine, being able to distribute out, you know, this is pretty cool. And so successfully testing and kind of, they're doing the same thing as everyone else. We need to have, you know, similar to, you know, Blue Origin and SpaceX, you need to be able to take the thing up, you need to bring it back down, you need to be able to reuse it. We need that because it's too expensive to do it otherwise. Yeah. But I like that more and more companies, and this is what I consider a pretty small company, 90 employees, you know.
Oh, yeah.
There are libraries in Ohio
with
more employees. You know, Cleveland Public has more employees than, you know, Stokes Space.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to watch these guys carefully. I do know that SpaceX got into some trouble because they had some bad launches. And so is it FAA? I think it's FAA who handles them.
Yeah.
It's not NASA. It's FAA. Has grounded them temporarily because they're like, hey, you've had some things that just didn't go. They blew up. We need to, like, rein it back in here, guys. Let's figure out what's going wrong. Because the other thing is, I mean, honestly, if I'm spending, you know, millions, billions, trillions of dollars on this satellite, it better get to space, you know. So with that, we're going to sign off. So every third Monday, We're going to be live here out of the studio at Madison Public Library in Madison, Ohio. And Talking Tech is where we get to talk about the news stories we find interesting. We love to have you chat. So thank you to a lot of the new people who joined us. We used to be on at 7:30 at night Eastern Standard Time, and we decided to move it to 11:30. And we're going to stay at this time and see if we get some people. So feel free to, you know, definitely come in. Let's see. We got another question here. Do y'all think we'll find a way to efficiently recycle metal waste before asteroid mining? You know, I've always thought it would be cool, and I always wanted to write a science fiction story about people going back through dumps, old landfills, and mining it for recyclables. Because I think there is, for certain metals, there's definitely an easy way to recycle. You know, aluminum. Aluminum's easy. The funny thing is, can aluminum is easier to recycle than, say, block aluminum. Mm-hmm. You know, but my grandmother actually worked for a company. She was the dispatcher for their trucking, that their primary business, 80s and 90s, was recycling all types of aluminum.
Hmm.
And I mean, they did a lot of it. Steel recycles well. Iron is magic. Pure iron. I wish we had more access to pure iron. Talk to a guy or a gal who is a farrier. So the people who work on horseshoes, because they're blacksmiths by trade, they'll tell you and wax nostalgically about pure iron, because it has beautiful properties and it's infinitely recyclable. Now there's other metals. Nickel is really hard to recycle. Lithium's getting better, but the problem is we mix it with stuff. And again, chemistry nerd out there, everyone knows lithium reacts with everything.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best experiments I've ever seen is someone chucking lithium into water. It's terrifying, but spectacular because it immediately reacts with, you know, same thing with sodium. So there's other things that are just hard to catch, to get rid of those chemistry bonds. Yeah. But if we can do it, you know, I'm all for recycling this kind of stuff. I'd love to see it. So thank you again for your, you know, awesome questions, awesome insights. I appreciate it. Hey, you know, please join us next time we're on. Keep an eye on it. Follow us on all of our social media. So Twitch, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Reels.
Everything.
We're on everything. I think we're on everything. So find us. It's either Madison PLOH or Madison PL if we got there first. So have a wonderful afternoon. We'll see you on interwebs. Feel free to hit us up anywhere else and have an awesome time.
Yeah.
Thank you.